Hey, everyone. Hi, it's Naomi Wolf, CEO of Daily Clout, and I'm here usually with This Week in Congress. But since we're going global, it's going to be This Week in Democracy. And I want to change the format a little bit. I'll be talking about the key things that are happening in the American Congress, but I also want to do a little bit of a tour about some important stories and developments in other parts of the world, and even other news that I think goes to the issue of empowerment and liberty that isn't strictly what happens in Congress. So you let me know if you like that new format, and let's just dive in. In Australia, which is a big part of our growing community, there's been a lot of important developments of citizens trying to protect Australian wildlife and sensitive ecosystems from rampant development. So there is a movement to protect the koalas, which are not yet identified as endangered species in Australia, even though there are warnings that in 20 years they will be gone unless there is a change in their designation and they're protected. But there's a movement to protect koalas in an area called Mount Lofty because the army is trying to build housing. They're trying to develop that area. And a huge issue in Australia is that koalas need corridors to go from place to place, especially if there are terrible bushfires like the ones of this summer. And what's happening is that their habitat is being kind of isolated from development. And so when there's a fire, they all get destroyed. There's estimates that 10,000 koalas died in the bushfires most recently. And so what this citizens movement is trying to do is to protect the koalas in Mount Lofty. There's also efforts in Kangaroo Island, a really sensitive area that is a beacon of tourism, wildlife tourism, that was terribly hard hit by the brush fires, to protect wildlife there. And there's a lot of activity around saving injured koalas, supporting them, attending to them, and concern that developers are also targeting Kangaroo Island. So the interests we found in Australia that are targeting sensitive wildlife areas are developers, an area around Sydney that is slated for development, especially water, Coca-Cola, apparently, and this is not about koalas specifically, but people have alerted us that Coca-Cola and other interests are sucking the water from underneath Australian landscapes to bottle it and take it away, leaving whole towns with no drinkable water. We've reported on Japanese wood chip interests. They use wood chips to heat their homes, and they're clear cutting Australian woodlands, and especially gum trees where koalas live, and wallabies also are endangered. Other animals, kangaroos, are endangered. There's, believe it or not, a traffic in kangaroo testicles. This is apparently an aphrodisiac in China. So kangaroos are being kind of massacred for this illicit trade. And finally, believe it or not, wombats. There was reporting that there are tourist junkets that bring Asian tourists to Australia to basically stay in a hotel and shoot wombats. And people in our community were saying wombats are like shooting a, you know, shooting a pillow. Like, they move slowly. They're big fluffy creatures. It's not, you know, an act of tremendous courage and daring to shoot a wombat. So a lot of people in our community, which is now extended to the Daily Clout community in Australia, are trying to sound the alarm for the rest of the world to be aware that there's this terrible dismissal of wildlife rights and endangered areas in Australia. It's not well protected. The citizens are saying so. It's not outsiders saying it. Outside interests are clear cutting. They're sucking water. They're being cavalier with the wildlife. So we're trying to sound the alarm so that if there's a legal way for international observers to call a halt to this destruction and empower citizens to pass some better laws protecting these areas. We're trying to sound the alarm by these announcements. Other important things are happening in Australia that relate to the coronavirus, and we're seeing this issue around the world. And by the way, I'm in a hotel. I often broadcast from hotels because I travel a lot, and I'm here at the Women of the World Festival in London at the South Bank Centre talking tomorrow about 30 years for the beauty myth. So forgive my hotel. It's a lovely hotel. It's the Sea Containers Hotel in the South Bank, but you've gone with me wherever I go, and I appreciate it. So in Australia, government officials, the senior government officials of the Liberal Party, which is the ruling administration, the administration running the country, because of the coronavirus, are claiming new powers. They're claiming powers to quarantine, and they're also encouraging people to tell on their neighbors if they think their neighbors are sick, so that their neighbors too might be quarantined. And this is concerning to civil rights advocates because Australia with this administration also has a history of giving the police powers to search people without probable cause, without a search warrant, and to strip search minors, believe it or not. So this is a further expansion of police powers to detain people due to the coronavirus. And one of the tweets I sent out this week to remind people and warn them is, while I don't believe governments created this epidemic, absolutely governments exploit epidemics. That is their favorite thing to do because, as Winston Churchill says, never waste a good crisis. I may be paraphrasing him. But what the danger is that around the world, the coronavirus will be the excuse for governments to strip people of civil liberties and to quarantine people, to make it difficult to travel, to, for instance, suspend elections. This is the worry that people are starting to think about in the United States, and other forms of stripping people of rights in the name of protecting them. All right, so we'll keep an eye on what happens in Australia with this grab of additional powers. Moving right along, New York, I just saw my home state, declared a state of emergency because of the coronavirus. So that sounds like a medical thing, and it may well be justified medically. However, I really want to warn people, a state of emergency also has legal consequences. When you declare a state of emergency, you get to basically not follow the Constitution. It really lets you suspend the Constitution. So we really need to watch that, because a state of emergency means, for instance, that the governor doesn't have to follow the Fourth Amendment if he wants to search people, or he doesn't have to follow the constitutional guidelines about due process if he wants to quarantine people without charge or trial. So it's very, I don't want to say concerning yet, but whenever a state of emergency is declared, there's a reason they do it. They do it so they can do shit that they can't do under a normal functioning civil society. You know, maybe just for good medical reasons, but it's often an excuse to do other things as well. So let's be super careful and protect our civil liberties really, really clearly. All right. Moving on to the U.S., H.R. 5931 is a bill that is in the House, in which the Housing Authority is supposed to create reports on mortgages under $70,000. And so I think that that's about making sure that low-income people are not exploited in lending situation. H.R. 5003 is a really interesting bill, also in the House. And we started to see bills like this, and they're really long overdue. We saw one on a New York state level to prevent students from being lied to by people trying to sell them student debt. So H.R. 5003 prevents people from lying to veterans when they're trying to collect a debt in collections. Like they can't say you're going to lose your army benefits. You're going to, you know, go to jail. We're going to take your house. They can't lie to veterans in the process of debt collection. So a lot of people would, you know, we like to call attention to when something's a good bill. You know, we're nonpartisan, but I think a lot of people on the left and the right would say not lying to students when you're trying to get them to take on student debt, and not lying to veterans. And basically, I'm sure the next step will be a good bill to not lie to anyone, right? If we put pressure, which is our job, Daily Clout. But that is a good bill to make it illegal to lie to veterans in the process of collecting debts from them. Congress also allocated, and this is why emergencies are very, very tricky and we need to watch them carefully. Congress in the United States allocated $8.3 billion to respond to the coronavirus. $8.3 billion. All right. So you could think that is awesome, as they should. Let's trot out the tests and the treatments and take care of our people. And that's HR 6074. However, folded in there, as you might expect, is padding, among other people, for small businesses. So how does coronavirus protection lead to money for small business owners? That's why we have to watch the bills very carefully. It's very easy to slip in, you know, millions or hundreds of millions of dollars for special interests. And then the question we've seen in the past is, how do you define a small business? And the Chamber of Commerce in the United States is the national organization that represents business. And they managed to pass all these bills that are about small business. But when you ask, when you look closer at the bill and you define small business, it turns out that it could be a very big business indeed. So this is more money for business under the guise of protecting people with emergency funding, $9 billion, protecting them from the coronavirus. If you want us to dive deeper into that bill and read it, we will. But we're doing a new format just for this week of boom, 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 boom. And we'll do a deep dive in a separate video when you want us to. Okay, HR 4508. This one is a straight up boondoggle. This has got to be called out, guys. This is ridiculous. HR 4508 is someone made a deal with Pakistan. And, you know, Pakistan's our ally. We give them a lot of money. The people of Pakistan don't always like the relationship because they think that the U.S. sometimes props up rulers who are corrupt. But we maintain our relationship with them by handing them lots of money. HR 4508, your taxpayer dollars, devotes 50% of USAID scholarships, not just in Pakistan, but all the scholarships of USAID, which is a branch of the State Department, kind of spooky, you know, kind of a spy thing, a lot of people say, or propaganda, a lot of people say, but USAID funds like cultural programs and outreach and speakers all over the world to promote American values. And it does a lot of good work, you know, just because it's spooky doesn't mean it doesn't do good work. But what this does is it takes half of that entire budget for scholars all over the world and gives it all to Pakistani women. And I'm a feminist. I would love for Pakistani women to get scholarships through USAID, but what kind of crazy boondoggle is it that 50% of all the USAID scholarships in the world are going to Pakistani women? So my spider sense goes, Pakistan doesn't care that much about its women, say Pakistani women who would like better representation and rights. The United States doesn't authentically care that much about Pakistani women. Pakistani women don't need American scholarships more than students all over the world who also need American scholarships. So what is going on? And I would hazard a guess that if you look more closely, that money is going to line some pockets and that the cover is, well, who can object to scholarships for Pakistani women? So, you know, if only there was a robust investigative press still in the United States, we could look more deeply into why half of all the scholarships are going to Pakistani women whose daughters is what I want to know, right? But it's definitely a terrible, that's a terrible law. Come on, it's a terrible law. All right. In Democracy News elsewhere, this is really cool. Virginia, the state of Virginia in the United States, in response to the coronavirus, in response to the diabetes epidemic, has passed a bill to put a cap at $50 on insulin. Of course, in the United States, diabetes is a huge, huge problem, especially with lower income citizens. And of course, as many of you know, we really don't have state-funded healthcare except for the very poor or the elderly here in the United States. So people are really bankrupted by, if they have a condition like asthma or a condition like diabetes that requires ongoing medication. They literally, I mean, I live in the South Bronx now, and people, there's a black market in diabetes strips, right? People cannot afford to treat their diabetes. So I would say this is a great bill, and other states should look at it, and citizens will love it. This is gold. It's nonpartisan. We found that the best bills are nonpartisan, and it's going to the governor. And so if the governor signs it and doesn't veto it, we'll keep watching that, because in a time of crippling medical bills for Americans, and no one yet can elect a Bernie, you know, who is one of the few candidates left viable who is calling for government-funded medical care, it may turn out to be a really creative solution for states to put caps on what people can be charged for absolutely urgent but, you know, chronic medications like insulin. And I'm sure asthma medications will be next if there's enough support for this bill. And again, that's your job, Daily Cloud community. If you like that bill, you can let the bill sponsors know. We'll post that bill on BillCam. You can tweet the bill sponsor. If you want your own representative to pass a bill like that, you can take the BillCam. You can tweet your own representative, and you can say, look, we're in Ohio, we're in Delaware, we want a bill like this. And you can get your friends, neighbors, and networks to vote up that bill and send it to your representative, and that really moves the dial, we found. All right. This is big. This Week in Democracy. Remember Eric Prince, the former CEO of Blackwater, which went around the world terrorizing people with its armies of mercenaries. It's changed its name several times because of the bad press it got. People were accused of essentially murdering citizens in countries where there was conflict that the United States had was advancing, and they're dangerous, scary people. And one of the big issues in the Iraq War is that Blackwater mercenaries weren't covered by the kind of law that restricts atrocities or attacks on citizens in war that covers American troops. They're contractors. They're not American troops. And a lot of them were contractors from other countries. I actually wrote about this in my 2008 book, The End of America. So he's back. Eric Prince sent his people overseas to, they continue to operate overseas, for instance, in the Emirates, in Saudi Arabia, but very scary. And I warned about this in The End of America. The New York Times broke a story that he sent ex-spies to the United States to infiltrate progressive groups. And this is a huge problem. And it's one that I have been worried about since 2008. Now it's happening. If you have former spies infiltrating progressive groups, what they do is they create splintering, they create dissension, They create reputational problems for progressive leaders. And my partner, who is a former Intel guy, has said that there are a lot of unemployed spies, you know, after the capture of Osama bin Laden, there wasn't money for intelligence operatives in the federal government. And so a lot of them need jobs. And so they're flooding the private kind of spy business. You know, you all know about Harvey Weinstein and Black Cube. So there are other companies like this that hire former spies and that use them to do things like corporate intelligence, corporate spying, basically competitive spying, and you know, and other less unsavory things. But certainly infiltrating activist groups, citizens groups, is totally unsavory. It should be illegal. We really have to pass some laws to make it illegal. And the reason it's so scary is the CIA is not allowed to do it, right? The CIA is not allowed to spy on American citizens or infiltrate them. They cannot do it. They do it overseas all the time, but it is unconstitutional, illegal for them to do it to us in the US. And the FBI gets in trouble. You know, they do it, but they get in trouble when it's revealed. So these contractors, again, don't have that oversight by Congress. And nothing, you know, I was dreading the day that this would happen. You know, I warned about it 10 years ago. These contractors have no constitutional barriers keeping them from infiltrating the ACLU or, you know, the Sierra Club or any organization, you know, the Girl Scouts, I mean, any organization, and creating dissension, creating intel dossiers, following people, finding out about their personal lives, blackmailing them, doing all the things that spies are trained to do. It's a completely catastrophic development and so bad for democracy. And of course, Trump cannot not know about this because Betsy DeVos is his education secretary, and I believe Eric Prince's sister, so, or another relative. So this, you know, the president has got to know about this and be okay with it, if not initiating it. I don't want to overstate till I know more, but it's a catastrophic day for American democracy that this is happening. And if you're in an organization that's doing any kind of progressive work, I'd highly recommend that you vet new employees very carefully, that you secure your files, that you compartmentalize your sensitive files so that not every intern or new employee or people you don't necessarily trust has access to everything. You might want to start communicating in Signal or other more private forms of communications. You want to, I would definitely say, put security cameras in your office, even when you're not there. You really want to boost the security of your organization if there are floods of former spies pretending to be starry-eyed interns fresh from Brown to help you save the pandas in your environmental group. And also be wary of people, and I can spot these a mile off now, people who try to pick a fight and try to splinter a group, because that is absolutely a standard tactic. And the last thing I want to talk about is Hachette. Actually, my publisher owns Little Brown. They are also Ronan Farrow's publisher, who wrote Catch and Kill, of course. And they're about to be Dylan Farrow's publisher. That's Ronan Farrow's sister, who, oh, Roscoe, thank you. Hi. You just gave me money. I appreciate that. And it will go straight to Daily Clout and straight to our operating expenses. Thank you so much. Dylan Farrow is going to be published by Hachette, who has bought her first novel. So why am I giving you this background? Because their dad and stepdad, no, dad is Woody Allen. Dylan Farrow accused Woody Allen, her dad, of molesting her when she was 7. And there were 2 investigations at Yale Medical School. Thank you, Roscoe. I really appreciate that. You keep sending me money. I will not say no. We really need it to keep our operation running. I'm super grateful. So she accused her father of molesting her. There were two investigations at Yale, which, as you know, if you follow me, is a hotbed of covering up sexual assault. They covered up sexual assault against me, for instance, and dozens of other women and men whose stories I reported in 2005 in New York Magazine. And most recently, I posted on Daily Cloud a video of Yale police threatening me with arrest as I was trying to file my grievance in 2018 about my sexual assault. Thank you, Joseph. Really, I love that you keep sending me money. I'm blushing, but I really appreciate it. And so the reason I'm telling you about this is that they announced that Woody Allen's autobiography would be published by them in April. At that point, Ronan Farrow made a statement saying he was disappointed that this was planned without informing him. He objected to it. There was a statement from Dylan Farrow also saying that she felt like this was a betrayal of survivors of sexual abuse. And more importantly, there was a walkout of 75 Hachette employees. They walked out and they made a statement that was very kind of eloquent and persuasive that they felt that this was not, you know, while they supported everyone's right to tell their story, they felt like they did not want Hachette to be the one to give Woody Allen a platform, especially because, as Ronan Farrow pointed out, Hachette had not checked with Dylan Farrow about the events recounted in the book. So it was one-sided from the point of view of the people who walked out. They didn't want Hachette to publish an accused child molester. I would really want to stress he's accused. He hasn't been found guilty of child molestation, but 75 people walked out. And I am quite amazed at the times we're living in. The next day, Hachette made an announcement that they were canceling Woody Allen's book. So you might say, what about the First Amendment? And I thought about that too, because I'm a First Amendment advocate and absolutist. And my view is, you know, everyone has the right to speak and Woody Allen can speak anywhere, but the First Amendment doesn't mean you also get a book tour, an advance, royalties, promotion, publicity and distribution. That's over and above the First Amendment. And I was very pleased to see that the Hachette announcement kind of made the same case. You don't want to sacrifice the First Amendment by any means. It's extraordinary. You know, whatever position you take on the canceling of Woody Allen's book, it's just extraordinary that the victim, alleged victim of child abuse, spoke out and said, this is not okay. You didn't talk to me. He abused me. This is a slap in the face of victims everywhere. You know, you made money on my brother's book about victims of abusers like Harvey Weinstein. Why are you publishing this man's book? And 75 people at tremendous personal risk to themselves. They're, you know, people in publishing are low paid and don't have a lot of power. It's an industry under threat from Amazon. And, you know, these are not wealthy people. And they really did. I am so proud of booksellers and publishers. They're always the heroes in every society. And they, you know, stood up for their principles. They walked out. And I'm proud of Hachette, my publisher. I'm really proud of them. I have to say, they haven't canceled my book either. And they really have a history of kind of standing up for what's right and publishing controversial material. But I appreciate that they chose to listen to the survivor say, you didn't talk to me. You didn't check this against me, the alleged survivor. This is not a kosher publication. So definitely, I don't want to minimize the issues, you know. It definitely raises deep questions about cancel culture and the First Amendment. At the same time, as a woman and as a survivor, and as I definitely think women's right to be free of sexual abuse and molestation is totally tied to democracy and liberty in general, it is incredible that it's March 7th. Harvey Weinstein is in prison. Woody Allen's book was canceled. And we're not living in the same universe that we were living in when these alleged, well, one convicted and one alleged predator operated with impunity. That's 30 minutes. This is Naomi Wolf. This is Daily Clout. And let's get some questions and comments. Annie DeFranco should have endorsed Warren, says Joseph Roscoe. We're nonpartisan, so I can't say that she should have, but you can, and I hear you. A lot of people are missing Elizabeth Warren. And for those of you who don't follow the U.S. presidential election, she is one of the most respected female candidates, and she lasted until Super Tuesday and bowed out. And a lot of people are hoping her voice will stay in the mix. A lot of people probably think she'd make a great vice president. That's where women who are talented are often, sent until they graduate to president, which is never. But a lot of people are hoping her voice will stay in the game. She raised a lot of issues other people didn't raise. And one of the issues she raised directly to Bloomberg, which I think he did not recover from in the most recent debate, was the issue of the women at Bloomberg disclosure. My children's father works for Bloomberg and worked for the campaign, but I have to address this or else I'm violating journalistic ethics. She spoke to the fact that many women were harassed at Bloomberg's company and were asked to sign non-disclosure agreements. And she challenged him to release them from their non-disclosure agreements, which is pretty ballsy. I mean, sorry for my language, but it's kind of gutsy. Okay. Joseph Roscoe says, oh, I'm devastated about Warren losing. Sorry about your Yale assault. Thank you, Joseph. I appreciate that. A lot of people really are devastated. I think she would have made a great president. Very sane, sensible, smart, compassionate person. And thank you for your kind words about my Yale assault. It was 1983. So I have survived, but the Me Too movement has affected me as well and emboldened me. And I do talk more these days about that assault and another bad thing that happened. Like a lot of women, more than one bad thing happened to me. And like a lot of women, I find that the more I talk about it, the less the demons should be out there and not in here, and that's as it should be. And talking is part of that, and your compassion is part of that as well. Thank you so much. No Divide and Conquer says, Hardlands Media did an interview with a voting machine whistleblower. Oh, please send us that and we'll post it. There's so much that needs to be done about securing the vote before the elections. Joseph Roscoe says, you said that, No Divide and Conquer. Can you please also do an episode on the mandatory vaccine agenda? I would like to, but let me encourage you to write an op-ed about it and send it to us and we'll publish it for a lot of reasons. One is that it's almost impossible for me and our writers to keep up with every important issue. And the other is you probably know a lot more about it than I do, but by all means, I mean, a lot of sane, smart people are raising questions about should there be vaccines, period, but the extent and intensity of how many vaccines American kids especially get these days and what's in them. And smart people like Robert Kennedy Jr. are raising questions. And of course, the minute you raise questions, you're called a crazy anti-vaxxer. So I'm wary because I have enough bots after me as it is. But I invite you to send the material. I'll air it, I'll post it, if it's credibly sourced, because I think it's perfectly legitimate for people to say, like, in outrages, the approach I took to those acts by the state is to really question what right the state has to invade our bodies at all, right? And of course, things like epidemics and measles and so on you know, make it very, you know, reasonable for the state to invade our bodies. But every time the state mandates that you need to do something with your body, people should take it very, very seriously. And people have a right to look very carefully at what they're being told by the state they have to put in their bodies. I think that's a legitimate thing for citizens to say. Barry Atkinson says, hi there. Hi there, Barry. I owe you an email. Thank you so much for being here. Joseph Roscoe says, should I dump Polly for good? I can't make that decision for you. And, you know, as free speech absolutist, no writer should be dumped. If you like her, the more that comes out about Harold Bloom, and the fact that Harold Bloom was her big promoter in her career, the more interesting that relationship is and her kind of incredible prominence is. But she's a smart, original, interesting lady. And just because she's hounded me for 25 years, it doesn't mean you should dump her. She's got a lot of, you know, intriguing things to say. And like, I do always like to say, let's listen to people who annoy us or provoke us or are politically incorrect. Let's just listen because we always learn. Let's see. Lorem's S1 says, give her a minute. She's such a flip-flopper. She'll buy her way back. Huh. You're talking about Elizabeth Warren, I assume, and not me, I hope. No Divide and Conquer says Tulsi is still in the race. She is. She's hanging in there. And I think it's so interesting that the Democrats are not letting her on the stage. And I think it's amazing to watch anyone who's got a fierce anti-war message get absolutely sidelined by the mainstream media in the United States. Whatever you think of her, Marianne Williamson. You know, not in the club. I know Marianne Williamson. She's a super smart lady, compassionate person, make a great president. She was totally treated like a lunatic from the minute she was in the race. And she's not a lunatic. So it's just fascinating to see people who are true outsiders with real ideas get completely sidelined if they're not either in the boys club or the Democratic club. And Joseph says, I'm a Polly fan. Tell me to dump her and I'll be done with her. I'm not going to tell you to dump her. That's hilarious. No, it's fine. You can keep reading Camille Polly. All right. No Divide and Conquer says some say coronavirus will be used to push mandatory vaccines for adults too. I mean, I think we're not seeing even the beginning of this. I promise you, check back here in 3 months. Coronavirus will be used to justify a lot of terrible things that people would not put up with under ordinary circumstances. And certainly I can see mandatory vaccines of some kind being part of the wake of this epidemic. And there are things about this epidemic I want to say that really bother me already. Again, I'm not saying the government created it. Although, you know, biological warfare is something we do in other countries. So, you know, it's not crazy to think about diseases being used as part of warfare, because America has done that, you know, and does that without question, as do other countries. But what I'm worried about is the branding. Honestly, if you look at the EU, Australia, and the US, they have already branded the coronavirus. There are these like perky little graphics accompanying communications about the coronavirus. Now, there's no branding for diabetes. There's no branding for AIDS. There's no branding for heart disease, you know, little fun graphics. It takes thought and money to create a logo. And I don't like how the coronavirus is kind of being rolled out with some communications skill. I always notice that as someone trained in PR in my first job. You know, people who are trained in propaganda also notice and can tell when there's a campaign. And when you see a coronavirus logo popping up in three, you know, in two countries and the whole European Union, there's some messaging that's gone into that and some plans that these governments have for using that logo. It's not a simple matter of a medical emergency. So we really need to be vigilant and stick together and you know, not let any assaults on civil liberties go without scrutiny and resistance. Warren, of course, not you ever, big heart. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Roscoe said, we've got a Bernie bro here. And we're going hard Biden. Marianne is a lunatic. You know, I don't agree. I don't agree. Again, I know her. I haven't seen her for a few years, but she's not a lunatic. She's a spiritual person. And we are in a society that says that spiritual people must be crazy unless they stay safely in their church or synagogue or mosque. I personally think that's too rigid, a dichotomy. And if people want to be spiritual and talk about their spirit and run for office or be scientists, I have no problem with that. But I hear she's definitely been depicted as a lunatic in the press. And so I'm not surprised that you would feel that way. Barry Atkinson says, no artwork in your room, how graphics and glitter cosmopolitan. Yeah, it's pretty stark and a little bleak. And I miss my puppy and my family for sure. But I can't complain. It's a lovely hotel in the South Bank. And I'm here at the Women of the World Festival. So, and I get to talk to you guys. But yes, it's definitely bleak. There's a nice bar downstairs, though. Yeah, we disagree there. You know, Joseph, that's fine. I mean, this is a community where I love it when people have different views and civil debate. You know, I love that. Where else do you get that? That's part of the dream of Daily Cloud, that I love your being here and disagreeing with me. So Lorem says, if they do push vaccines in response, the pushback could be to demand transparency on the production of the vaccines and their distribution. Absolutely. I totally agree with you, Lorem's one. And I think what we've seen in all these discussions is that transparency is the basis for everything we need to do as citizens, and there's so little of it. So when you get transparency, then you can make informed decisions. 100% agree with you, which is why we need an independent media, which goes back to please support your independent media. Remember to become subscribers. Please support us on Patreon. Please become members. It's only $3.99 a month, and now we've got the BillCam rollout for being able to play with BillCam, send BillCam bills to your networks, get verticals in your inbox where you find out about issues that matter to you. So, and that's $24.99. So please, you know, this is a big push to keep delivering these videos explaining bills, the fantastic journalism that citizens are doing and that we're doing on the Daily Cloud website, and to keep the hosting and data flowing for BillCam, where you can find any state or federal bill, send it through social media. It takes a lot of resources. And Daily Cloud Australia. So please, 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 if you've got $3.99 a month, give up that latte, send it to us to become a member so we can keep our doors open and, you know, meet our fixed costs. And if you really want to be incredibly proactive with democracy and you can afford it, get that pro membership for $24.99, and then you can do things with BillCam that really will keep you informed if you are an advocacy group, if you're an investor, and anyway, if you want to do something in between or more or less, go to Patreon, please. And please support us. It is critical. We're growing, but we need to grow fast because we're growing with demands as well, and news and information. So we need to hire more people. We need to hire more graphic designers, more editors. It's a race, and I need your help to keep growing this community that you are such fantastic parts of. All right. Have you heard the conspiracy theory out there that you and Monica Lewinsky are the same person? It's so crazy. I mean, that makes me a little sad, but the world of conspiracy theories is ridiculous. And I don't know what to say. I'm not Monica Lewinsky. And I was married and had one child when she was in the news. And I was busy diapering a baby and not being her. No divide. I would never sleep with a married man, let alone the president of the United States. I wouldn't do it. No divide and conquer. What can we do to fight back against further infringements on our liberties because of the coronavirus? Quarantines, martial law, travel restrictions, mandatory vaccines. Well, that is the question. No divide and conquer. and we all should be asking it. That's critical. The first thing we should do is what you're doing right now. You know, you're giving up a Saturday evening if you're on the East Coast, Saturday afternoon if you're on the West Coast, wherever you are in the rest of the world, you're spending time to talk about democracy and liberty and hard things, you know, instead of playing a video game. So that's number one, you're informing yourself. So now you can inform your family and your friends and neighbors. You know what the issues are and you can bring them to me and to us here at Daily Cloud. You have a role, you know, like all the things I read to you, they didn't just come from me. They came from citizens in this community alerting me and saying, hey, Daily Cloud, this is going on. You've got to let people know about this. So you be the watchguard of liberty. When there are things going on that we should alert people to, you be Paul Revere. That's number one. Number two is read the Constitution. Find out what your rights are. Look at the National Lawyers Guild website. Know your rights or read my books, you know, The End of America and Give Me Liberty, really spell out what your rights are. Actually, unfortunately, Give Me Liberty is hard to find, but members on Patreon get me to send them The End of America inscribed, and that's a really good primer for watching democracies under threat and knowing what to do, you know, what tools there are to fight back. What else can you do? I mean, you know, I would say protest as much as you can. The scary thing about watching Australia be turned into what I think is like a petri dish for testing fascism in a developed world country is, you know, they lost the right to protest. People can be moved on by police, even if they're just peacefully protesting. And I mentioned that the police can strip search anyone. Once you lose the right to protest, it's very hard to protect any other rights. So you lose the right to protest by not using, I mean, not to blame Australians or anyone who's lost the right to protest, but you have to use the right. So for instance, there's going to be a march tomorrow for International Women's Day. I really don't feel like going because I would rather rest and read and do some work, do my taxes, but I'm going to go because it's really important to show up and be counted. Document abuses when you're protesting, when you're crossing a border and being bothered by police, when someone asks to come into your house, you know, without a warrant, film them. You know, if you are calling your representative, record it once you check that it's a one-party state in the United States where it's not illegal to record. Citizens have to start recording abuses, you know, putting them out there, being public, because that's part of the transparency that keeps elected officials accountable. I don't know how you guys will feel about this, but I just have to be honest. I used to hate guns. I still hate guns. I used to think there could be no such thing as a reason to have a gun. But then I dove deeply into the Second Amendment and also realized that, and this was in the Obama and Bush administrations, that the United States government said that they were keeping a hit list of American citizens. They were killing American citizens with drones, right? You remember Aulaki, a U.S. citizen who was killed, and his 16-year-old son was killed with a drone. So once the government says they will take you out, even if you're an American citizen, I read and read and read the Second Amendment, and there is no way to conclude that if you really believe in the Constitution, you have to conclude that citizens have the right to bear arms. You have to. And if you really look at how democracies die, one of the things, and gun rights advocates say this, and I used to think, oh, they're just a bunch of crazy people, but it's actually true historically. When people want to close down a civil society, they take away the guns. I hate guns. I'm scared of guns. I don't like guns. But I appreciate that the founders gave us the Second Amendment and the right for citizens to bear arms because militias were breaking into people's homes and the citizens were not armed and the armies of the tyrant were armed. And I think we need to have sane gun laws, background checks, all this good bipartisan, sensible, middle of the road gun laws so that crazy people don't have AK-47s. But I think knowing how to shoot a gun, like my brother is, I shouldn't say who, never mind. I know a lot of people who are super nerds, but who are in communities that are under threat. Or targeted by right-wing nationalist groups. And they are, you know, these nerdy, peaceful people are learning some basic firearm safety, learning some target shooting, so that if, God forbid, they have to, they will be able to defend themselves and their families. So I do think people knowing how to shoot guns and having access to guns with good background checks, you know, I cannot say that is not a way to defend liberty. It is, if you really believe in the Constitution. What else can you do? I mean, there's so much, and we could talk about this all night. I don't want to silence you. There are other questions, but going to more peaceful things, meet with your representative, let your representatives know that there, you don't have a high tolerance for overreaching because of the virus. Be very skeptical about the news. You know, don't believe everything you read. I mean, obviously take precautions, but don't make any decisions out of hysteria or panic. Because over and over again, and you saw this with terrorism, you know, the terrorist hysteria, they tried and tried and tried and it didn't work. People saw through it. So you should just go, here's what you can do. Assume, and again, I've been saying this for years, that if people who have a lot of power can have all the power they want it, and that they will try anything they can to get it. And they are trying and trying and trying. So they tried with trying to make all of us afraid of Muslims and pretending that there were terrorists under every bed. It didn't work. People saw through it. They are going to use the coronavirus scare to pass laws that suppress liberties. So be willing to face bots and attacks and smears in raising questions and being skeptical. Those are the things I would say are important in you know, living with this and going through it. Can I get, I think you mean outrages on Amazon. I don't know. I think so. The last time I checked, you can. And I will send you a copy if you want to have me do that. Let's see. Charles Williamson said, in November, could COVID-19 be employed as a means of voter suppression by a quarantine? Charles, 100%. I mean, that's my assumption. Honestly, it's very useful. You saw it's already been employed as voter suppression. There was a story, I think, at the Washington Post about an African-American voter who waited 7 hours ostensibly because of coronavirus. And it's always the African-American voters who have the barriers because they tend to vote for Democrats. Not that Democrats don't also want to suppress Republican votes. So absolutely categorically, which is why another thing that we really should start doing is pushing to make sure that every state has absentee ballot laws so that you can send in an absentee ballot easily without a big reason. And a lot of states like Florida and Nevada do have laws where that are pretty flexible, where you can send in an absentee ballot, even if you're still in your home and it's just inconvenient to get to the polling place. We let African-American voters in Alabama know about this, and it really made a difference in how many absentee ballots there were in their governor's race. I believe, no, the Senate race. let's see. As to protesting, the 2016 DNC event had a, quote, free speech zone. What can you do when the lawmakers negate the Constitution? Oh, that is such a great question. You know, I love the ACLU and I love the National Lawyers Guild, and I think you should sue the heck out of people. I mean, lawsuits, you know, we're all given the First Amendment. There's no such thing as a free speech zone. The United States is a free speech zone, according to the Constitution and the First Amendment. So if you can find a lawyer who will take your case pro bono, if you are up against a free speech zone, or if you have standing, if you can say, I'm a Democrat and this violated my constitutional rights, talk, you know, social media is amazing. Put a tweet out on Twitter, on Facebook saying, does anyone want to represent me? This is not okay. And you might get a lawyer who will represent you. You can also make your feelings known to the DNC, write a letter and say that this is turning you off so much that you are thinking of unregistering as a Democrat and telling all your friends to unregister as a Democrat. That scares them. Here's a secret of political activism. People in power really don't care if their own voters are mad at them. They care if swing voters are mad at them, because they know if you're a Democrat, you have nowhere to go. But if you say this is really making me want to vote Republican or register as an independent, they will pay attention to that. And if you can get, you know, 50 people in your community to sign that letter, that and they vote, right, and put their names, because people can see if your friends and neighbors voted, that is golden. That is huge. The Second Amendment is invaluable. If you fear guns, it's usually because of the movies. Go learn about them. Take a few classes. Go to a range. I agree. Yes. My husband uses a firearm in his work. I have gotten used to having a gun in places. It still terrifies me. I actually shot a gun. A relative taught me to shoot a gun. And there's hilarious video my cousin took of me shooting the gun and then dropping it in panic and running away. So I don't think everyone can get over their anxiety. I'm sure I could if I kept taking classes. But I do agree that demystifying it, especially for those, you know, Northeastern liberals like me, who were raised to fear and loathe guns, it is eye-opening. And as a woman, I have to say it's empowering. It did make me feel empowered to think, you know, if there's a rapist, I can blow him away. That is a good feeling there. I said it. All right, well, we're just sharing. Let's see. But that said, they still terrify me. And also, I just don't want to downplay, like, statistics show that if you do keep a gun in your home, it can be very, very, very dangerous. So whatever you decide to do, I agree with Lorem's one that knowing gun safety is critical, and good background checks and good gun laws that keep, you know, automatic weapons out of the hands of lunatics is also critical. Oh, thank you. Joseph said he just ordered Outrages. Screw that Brit interviewer. Thank you so much. No Divide and Conquer says, thank you. We're getting up toward an hour. This is really fun, but I should wrap up pretty soon. Charles Williamson, they don't really need to. They just need to do like Texas did and close polling places. That's true. And you guys, you really need to push for absentee ballots, because there will, you heard it here, this president is not going away easily. And you can bet that the 2020 election will not go like every other United States election. There will be disruptions. There will be, you know, scares. There will be crises and chaos and confusion. It's guaranteed. And we as citizens have to be really vigilant. And one of the things I want you to do is photograph your ballot. Check the laws, make sure that it's legal. Believe it or not, in some places it's illegal for you to photograph your own ballot, but I really want to encourage people to photograph their own ballot. You don't have to post it or share it, but if there's some contention in counting the ballot in your state, people can upload their ballot to a, you know, a third-party platform that's private, where at least the person tasked with counting the ballot, or public, can, you know, count those votes. There's a lot to be said for secret ballot, but it's a pretty new historical innovation. Ballots didn't used to be secret. And in this age of voter fraud, I think there's a lot to be said. Look, Google knows everything about you anyway. There's a lot to be said for if people are willing to say who they voted for, you know, or blank out their names, but upload their ballot. It's a great way to get an objective third-party tally and not rely on these insane machines that you wouldn't rely on to make a bank deposit with your, you know, salary check. Roscoe Joseph says, Naomi supports Christmas. I do. And happy Purim. Drink, Naomi. You will be. Thank you so much. Where can one take gun classes in New York City? You know, I actually looked that up. I think there are classes in the boroughs. And I know that about 2 hours north of New York City, there are a lot of gun clubs around the Millerton, Copake area. So you might want to take a train a little bit out of the city on a day out, a day trip, and take a class. But I believe there is one firearms class that police use and other people use in Manhattan. And a quick Google search will tell you there. I am not sponsored by the NRA. You know, we are nonpartisan. I hate guns. I just want to say I'm just being honest about the Constitution. You guys, this has been a really, you know, even though we're talking about serious things, it's been a really wonderful hour. You've raised some really important points. I really appreciate it. Please let me know by email if you like this format of quick for This Week in Congress, covering a lot more stuff, more than going in depth with reading a whole bill. If you'd like me to save the reading of a bill for a more specialized video, which I'm happy to do every week. And also, again, please go to Patreon, make a donation, 5, 10, 20, 100, whatever you can afford. It goes so far. Go to our membership page on dailycloud.io and become a member. Help us grow. And then you also get to do really cool things like take an op-ed writing class, you know, submit your op-eds, you know, upload your material to bulletin board and be part of this incredible community. The way I informed you comes from you. Subscribe on YouTube. We're almost 100,000 video views. You know, 2 years ago, people were saying Americans are not interested in the bills. They're not interested in, you know, democracy. Global citizens aren't interested enough. And here's a channel that's growing and growing because of you and your willingness to take over democracy, to protect freedom, and to be real patriots wherever you are. This is Naomi Wolf. It's Daily Clout. Support us, be part of this community, and have a wonderful, wonderful week. Thank you.